computer to work. First, we'd like to start with a little activity and some class participation. What I want you to do is to build, since our directions aren't on the computer, I'll read them to you. Take your pixie sticks and your marshmallows to create the best structure possible. Use your imagination and be creative. Do not trade your supplies. And that's all the instructions we can give you. Go for it, you have 4 minutes.
You got your own marshmallow. Where's yours? Did you eat them?
You ate all your resources.
Oh my God.
You got no job.
Okay.
guys can eat your food now. We don't have power in the computer, right, so we don't have our audiovisual presentations for y'all, but have to go with it. So with the example of resources and structure, that you're supposed to be using what you have to build your life, and that sometimes, you know, you don't have appropriate materials or you don't have a means of interacting with other people who can help you build that structure for yourself. So we started at a really national level about students in the United States, because our topic is about women in multiple roles, mostly students who are parents. And so in the United States, 32% of undergrads enrolled across the nation label themselves as independent with dependents. So that's not even counting graduate students, that's undergrads alone. 26% of those students are considered low income, and 59% of those undergrads are single parents. And then amongst women students in Michigan, we're ranked 36th nationally out of 51, including Washington, D.C., in terms of women who complete college. 56% of the students in Michigan are women, which is a pretty good percentage, but about 20% of those don't get to their graduation date. And just enacted recently, I guess, I don't know where this information came from, but that you can't be, with the new welfare to work rules Governor Engler helped pass through, you can't be in school and on welfare simultaneously without really severe restrictions on how many hours and how many credits and how much work you're doing at the same time, so that it's very restrictive for people trying to get ahead. And then how we identified our population of interest. With our theory about multiple roles, the number of women in the Ann Arbor University of Michigan has escalated since 1950. There was only about 26% of the population, and then now the 1999 numbers was 47% of the population were women, across graduate and undergraduate degrees. And it's a report from Lepore in 1995 said that data suggests that chronic stressors may increase psychological vulnerability to acute stressors by stripping people of their biological, psychological, and social coping resources. So that with the introduction of multiple roles into women's lives, they're being faced with a multidimensional coping strategy that they might not have had access to or been taught how to cope with all the different levels that they're now being faced with.
Surprisingly, with all of these figures, there's really not a network of support at the University of Michigan. There are programs that target graduate students, but really nothing exists, with the exception of a lesbian moms network, for undergraduates at all. So understanding the environment is pretty critical to, do we have it now?
Just about.
Okay. Understanding the environment is very critical to our needs assessment of the community. And as Izumi pointed out a few weeks ago, the University of Michigan is a very politicized environment. So we really have to get a good assessment of the major players and their roles of power and all those other things. One of the main people or organizations that we're working with is the Rackham School. They actually house a lot of the different programs, or there is information there available for parents who are also students. It's an umbrella organization that acts as headquarters for many of the graduate programs on campus. And some of the programs that are available are Kids Care at Home, which provides service for kids who are sick at home for a fee, Family Housing, Family Care Resources Program. And our contact there is Jane London. Jane is the parent advocate for graduate students, and she essentially serves as a voice for the needs of students who are also parents. She's been very, very helpful and is very excited about our findings and really wants to know, wants to hear our feedback on what the university is doing. Our other contact at Rackham is Damon Fairfield. Damon is the president of the Graduate Student Government. And just this weekend, he sent out an email trying to gauge interest for parents who are also students for like a social network, so people can feel like they belong to the community. The other organization that we're working with at the university is the Center for Education of Women. CEW provides funding and counseling and support to women students on campus. Together, CEW and Rackham have recently formed a task force for student parents. Their first meeting was actually last week, and this comes out of a study that was done over the last 2 years on grad student parents, and they explored funding, accessibility, curriculum, etc. The results of the study were basically that parents really want more money, they need more money and more resources, and also they feel very isolated from the community, whether it's within their programs or just the university in general. The last organization we're working with is actually the Women's Center of America. The Women's Center is a new organization as of January 2000, and they're very willing to implement new programs, which makes this really great for us. They're very, very flexible about this. They're adding new programs currently, and so this way we're not forcing any of our ideas upon them. They're ready to receive them.
And we also wanted to look at issues of community and organizational diversity within the women student parents on campus. And although this particular community shares a common experience of being both student and parent, a wide range of diversity issues come into play. For example, student mothers at the University of Michigan come from all different racial, ethnic, religious, cultural backgrounds, as well as socioeconomic levels, and also as well as if they are single parents or two-parent, if they have family in-state, out-of-state, what their just personal support systems are in their family. We initially looked at women in multiple roles that included wife or mother, partner, student, and employee, and we narrowed it down to just parent and student because it was too broad of a, too many roles to look at for this time period. And the variance of roles in the community of student mothers demonstrates the need for both multicultural organizing as well as diversity among the facilitators of the program. The facilitators must consider these roles that come into play, whether this is just a student and a parent, or whether this is a student, an employee, a partner, a parent. You need to look at those things. And also you need to be aware of your own status as well as the facilitator. Are you a student parent? Are you going to be somebody coming into this group who has no idea what these kind of role constraints can be? And then adapt yourself and your presentation to be there as strictly a facilitator, not somebody to say, I'm in, you know, the same boat as you, tell me how you're feeling, oh, that's terrible, that's too much. It's also important to examine the cultural and religious beliefs of the particular group of student mothers that you are working with. For example, African women, maybe international students who come there, a lot of African cultures, women carry their babies constantly, even up to like 2 years old, on their chest or back, and how you need to be aware of that and say, well, maybe you wouldn't be so constrained in your roles if you put your baby down for a little while and did your housework, and then you need to understand that that's how these women do everything, and not try to say that that's a bad thing for their children to be, you know, physically attached to them 24 hours a day. And also for religious and cultural backgrounds, there may be outside role constraints coming from a particular religion or culture inflicted on the woman for being a student while they're a parent. So you need to look at those issues as well. And always be aware of your bias and privilege when working with them.
I'm going to talk about methodology, what we're planning to do, and how we're planning to do it. We are, actually last night, we initiated our first contact to get to parents who are also students, and we did this via email, emailing different departments and different schools within the University of Michigan. And as of, like, 3 hours ago, we'd already received 9 answers of people who wanted to participate. So this is obviously a real concern for people in the University of Michigan. Within that email, we stated that we would have these, ask them what days would be most accommodating for them, what nights, what evenings, what mornings, within the next month or so. And also we told them that we would have childcare and refreshments provided, which formed an incentive for them to come to the focus groups. When they get there, we are going to have like a 1-page survey questionnaire about what kinds of services they know about currently at the University of Michigan is providing. Have they ever accessed those services? Do they have any recommendations or suggestions about things that would be useful to them as a parent? Things like that. We're also going to target with the survey a mass meeting that's being held at Rackham next week so that we would get a wider range of answers for our questions. And our focus groups, refreshments and talk are provided. Will hopefully be 8 to 10 participants from diverse educational and socioeconomical and racial backgrounds that the university represents. We've already actually gotten one man who responded, so I know we have a little bit of diversity in there. We'll have a facilitator from our group and a recorder, and then someone who will watch the kids. And the groups will be organized according to like what time they requested would be good for them, so it's very participant-friendly focus groups. And our analysis is going to be a content analysis of the dialogue, picking out what things are important, what quotes, as well as a trend analysis, which we hope will be helpful. And these results we will give back to Rackham, as well as the Center for Educational Women and the Women's Center, who are all really anxious to see what these women and parents want and need in this university. The working collaborative, one thing that we've really learned already in this is that it's very hard to target one organization because of the very nature of our project, the women's multiple roles, in that as multiple roles, they're not only mothers, but they're students as well, and their lives are touched by different organizations that can help them provide resources. So we're trying to coordinate those different organizations and see how we can help them and how they can help the parents in the university. And each agency knows and supports us and that we're talking to other agencies that share the concern about parents who are also students. So, do you guys have any questions about our project or what we're doing?
Mm-hmm. Is it for, are you targeting everybody or graduate students or undergrads? I don't know.
Both.
Both, everything. Mm-hmm. Okay.
We're still waiting for the okay to send out a mass mailing to undergrads.
Okay.
You have to go through the dean, so it's kind of difficult. But actually, the study that was done for 2 years only targeted grad students, and that was actually one of the most telling complaints from an undergrad. There was a quote saying, you know, why is there nothing at all? Why is no one interested in us? So definitely want to look at that.
About how to best go about forming the collaboration between the different agencies and the parents as well, and us, because we're students as well. Do you guys have any suggestions?
Do you mean as far as just getting a meeting to order, like an organization meeting that we're doing? I'm not sure what I'm asking.
That's a good idea, getting people within each organization to meet together.
Yeah.
We don't have one set up with that.
Where we can have representatives from each organization there and have all of them talk about their services, what they have, and then have the community of single parents in this case come up and give testimony of what they'd like to see. And that way you've got representatives of appropriate representatives as well of all of your organizations that are listed directly.
That sounds great.
Does the university have data about which students have kids and which don't?
They in answer to our question about that, they don't have enough funding to find out.
One of the problems that I've had is I want to focus on the diversity among the group, and I can say that I know that student mothers are different ethnicities and religions, and whether they're partners or wives or whether they work, but I can't back that up with any numbers because they're just not there.
Supposedly there's a proposal sitting on the provost desk right now so they can start collecting this information, but it just hasn't gone through yet.
It's one more line item on the questionnaire.
It just seems so standard.
Yeah, just so simple.
I'd be interested also to know, like, if the
majority of students that have, especially undergrad, like are traditional students or more non-traditional and are older and have come back. Like, I wonder.
Yeah.
It's true. And I also think, like, just from thinking about this in the past week or so, is that I think University of Michigan, the population that we're going to reach, is a little bit different than if we were doing this at Eastern or at WCC. Mm-hmm. I think it's a very different, we would get a lot more non-traditional students at WCC who are going there at night than we will at University of Michigan.
Age of the kids might also be important. I think at WCC it's saying you might have a lot of much younger children, whereas here at UM I would suspect that you have an older female demographic who has gone back and might have kids at home, but they're not, you know, 1, 2 toddlers, etc.
That's actually been another thing that the university looked into, because there isn't a lot of support for part-time graduate students. Some programs don't even offer it. Mm-hmm. So you would assume that the part-time students would be the ones with the really young kids, because they couldn't be here full-time. Mm-hmm. So they were looking into that, too, how to make things more accessible for those type of people.
Just to go along with what Jana suggested about community forum, there are brochures that I think RADCOM puts up with different resources for student parents. But one, I wonder how much, how well that's distributed. So the student parents may not know about the resources to begin with. Two, so the community forum could be part, you know, resource fair, you know, where agencies or units, or yeah, childcare agencies around the area or public school officials, whatever, come together and present what they do, or where the parents can work on and the position. And last half, second half of that could be hearing from the parents themselves. Okay, this is great that there are these services, but what about this and what about that? So I think there's the two issues that the university doesn't know the issues, but also parents are so overwhelmed and so busy that they don't have time to get around with them.
Hopefully we'll get to some of those questions by the survey. We'll see that, so we might get answers to some of those.
Okay. Information has been a problem, like, in both directions, because the university can't ask on, like, your application for admission, you know, if you have kids or if you're married. Those are all, you know, taboo questions. So unless they have money to fund a follow-up project for those kind of questions, then they're not going to get asked. And then, you know, each of the centers that we've talked to have a web page or some information resources, but they aren't linked to each other, so there's no network. So they're not really having a good dialogue, interacting. And then, like, on the RACM page, it has a list of services for students, but a lot of them will be headed under, like, for the family housing. So if you're not in family housing, you can't access these services. You have to, like, pick and choose which services are available to you. And it gets really complicated to even figure out, you know, what am I eligible for? So that information has been a really big problem in this whole, which is why we want to make sure our information is available to more than one group. We don't want everyone to get the jump on it or whatever and try to duplicate services, but we want everyone to know what we discover to help alleviate some of this information lag.
Maybe if, like, you get a lot of responses, hopefully, to your email, that and you can't include all those people in focus groups for, like, logistical reasons or whatever, maybe you can send all the people that responded to the survey at least or something.
Did you get any reaction around the issue that your MSW students, for example, there are some other MSW students who are parents and sort of feel weird about going to you to talk about issues?
I've gotten all the emails, but I haven't responded yet to them because I've been in class all day. And I noticed one of them was an MSW student, and a couple of them were from doctoral students from biopsych, and so a lot of them are probably going to have more education than we are, but I'm hoping that it'll be helpful. Like, it's really not us who are presenting, it's really them who are sharing together what resources they have and what they know about and what their concerns are.
You can now eat your face, students.
I've already started already.
Especially for those of you who want to do international work or want to work with a non-profit organization, you know, like transcultural organization. So that's one agenda. And I please bring back that stack of paper I gave you today. You can look through them, and if some of them may be, for example, there's defining community, and there's a couple handouts that you can fill out. If that's useful to your assignment, you can do that as part of your paper.
So basically what we're going to do is we're going to fill you in briefly about some of our issues and some of our essential strategies and tactics. However, we're going to focus more then on processing what occurred when we met with program coordinator generations last evening and some issues that arose from that conversation. However, on the board, there's a brief outline of what we're going to do. I'm going to introduce the program real quick, do the five issues, and then Teresa's going to chat about the strengths and limitations that we see of the strategic plan that we created for generations. And then Jessica and Jason are going to talk about the meeting that we had with the program coordinator last night. Like you guys know, Generations is a program that deals with children who either have a parent or guardian in prison or have a parent or guardian or close relative that is at risk for, falling, committing crimes. As you know, we work closely with the program coordinator in terms of learning about the organization, learning where they are now, where they would like to go, and that helped us, in a sense, develop and come up with the issues that are currently affecting generations and essentially create our strategic plan. We really wanted to focus on improving the quality of the programming for the children at Generations. So by doing that, we wanted to address the children's needs and assets while we were trying to create a strategic plan all at the same time. So we came up with five issues that we felt that generations could look at and hopefully address and then improve upon. The first issue was that we need to know what are generations' program goals and how does generations intend to achieve these goals. Like you heard about last time, they have a mission and vision statement, however, they're in the process of revising it. So we suggested that they do that. So that was an example of one of our strategies for that issue. And then the second issue was how can generations strengthen the relationships between the tutors and the mentors and with generations and the generation staff. And then the second element was that how can the tutors and mentors improve their relationships with the children. So we suggested that generations look into creating and implementing an orientation and training specifically for the tutors, and that they hold dialogue sessions several times throughout the year so the tutors can come in and talk candidly with the program staff. Our third issue is how can generations improve the diversity among its tutors and mentors? And that was a big thing when we spoke last time. And it was great because we were able to take a lot of your feedback and bring it back to the program coordinator. We even suggested in that paper, especially on project outreach and also incorporating some of the retirement communities and trying to recruit tutors and mentors from there to increase the diversity of the tutor-mentor population. So we suggested that as one of our tactics. The fourth issue, which we spoke in detail about during our last presentation, was how can generations determine the needs and assets of the children throughout their involvement in the program? And as you can remember, we suggested that they were to develop an educational biopsychosocial assessment and that they were going to administer that to the students, to the children. And then our final issue dealt with evaluation and how can generations evaluate the success of this program. And basically we suggested, because right now currently they know by I guess, subjective comments that come through. They really don't have any objective measures currently to see how the program is functioning. So we suggested that they administer surveys and questionnaires on a regular basis to the tutors and the parents and the guardians and the children of the program.
And that one's kind of tied into the first one of the whole mission, because if you don't really have your mission, your goals, how can you even evaluate yourself if you don't have what you're trying to do, or, you know, their vision? So,
So basically, our whole focus was to, in our strategic plan, like, we suggested these strategies and tactics, and we came up with these issues, and we involved Joni a lot in it. In addition, when we presented it to Joni, and it's like, here, you know, if you, what you can take from this, take it, run with it, but try to include the children, try to include the tutors and mentors. And then if you read our paper, we tried to suggest ways that everybody could be equally involved in implementing the strategic plan. And in terms of when would the implementation occur, most of the stuff would be slated for, like, fall 2000. Like, they're running through, they run the academic year, so in a sense, you know, they're already started this year. We have a lot of great ideas, and a lot of the planning and the pre-work can begin now. However, most of the implementation will occur in the fall.
So. I'm just going to briefly talk about the agency's strengths and weaknesses that we've found. First and foremost, I think that Generations had really good community support. And in talking with Joni last night and going over some things with her, she shared with us that the Junior League, the local one in Ann Arbor, donated $25,000 to their agency. So that is one example of the positive community support that they have with this agency. The other strength is the relationships with universities around the surrounding area, not only U of M, but Eastern. They do get their tutor mentors from them, and they also do get their interns. So that's a positive relationship. We also thought that a strength of Generations was their leadership and their openness and willingness to change. Like we said, Joni has been involved in this process. Every time, you know, we turn in a paper, she's very willing. She wants to see it right away, see what we've come up with. So herself, she is very open to new ideas. She wants to implement something to increase the effectiveness of the agency. And that also goes with the agency as a whole. They all really work together. So that was definitely one of their strengths. Some areas for growth or weaknesses that they had were the fact that we're outsiders implementing, you know, this plan. And this was done relatively quickly. We only had a semester to come up with this. Some side issues with that time frame was the fact that, you know, last night she kind of mentioned to us, because we had handed out surveys to the kids, and she was kind of looking for a statistical analysis of the surveys that we did. And we didn't do that. We did, you know, look at the surveys and, you know, and get the comments from them. We were not going to do a whole statistical breakdown. And that was just a part of the short time period that we had. So, also with the surveys, one of the limits that we had was the age frame. With the younger kids, it was hard to use questionnaires where, you know, they could write down an open-ended question. It was really stick to yes, no questions. Also, some other limitations was that Generations only has two paid staff, and Joni, the program manager, is only there part-time. So, and our last weakness of the agency was the high turnover rate for tutors and mentors, and also with the interns. You know, they're only there for a semester. So that's what we found.
As far as our plan goes,
mm-hmm.
Right. As far as, you know, anyway, we like a lot. I think, our plan.
Mm-hmm.
So we did meet with Joni last night, and since it is more of an informal kind of place, you know, she picked Applebee's, you know, for us to do our little thing. So over our hot chocolate and coffee, we presented it to her, and I think one of the most important things that we got out of it, out of the whole presentation process. And I don't know if you guys have done, any of you guys have done it yet. I guess I thought back to the beginning of the semester when, if you saw the strategic planning chart, how it's always a continuum and always keeps going. And even as we're sitting there presenting, we're brainstorming more things and just coming up with more and more things that it's like, oh, I actually thought about that from the paper kind of thing. But it really was just a good session, you know, just to use that even as a basis, you know, the strategic plan as a basis for things. And I guess at this point, since we do have such limited time in consideration, that's basically all it can be for the most part. But she was really happy. We shared the survey results with her. We really made sure, we wanted her to know how the kids felt about the place. And that was one of our main things, is we wanted her to know that they do enjoy it, first of all, that it is a place. Let's talk over here too. That is a place that they want to come to, and it possibly more. And she was, like they were saying, the feedback you guys gave us for like the project outreach and those programs, she was really excited about those. I mean, the whole project outreach thing, just to know that she'd have a commitment, which is a big thing there, to have commitment and just involve more people in any possible way. One of the things that we did end up brainstorming on a little, which personally, I don't know why I didn't do it before, was the whole tutor thing. Right now, she has two IP, or not tutor, intern. She has two IP interns right now, and she has such a hectic schedule, and she's a part-time person as a coordinator, and it's just such a simple idea to maybe take on a CO person or a management person who can really take part of the workload for her. And, you know, obviously not a ton of it, but it can really help her and ease her position in certain ways. She did have some reservations about that. She likes the idea, but just she seems to have had bad experiences about who she's even had to interview. And I guess we all know Office of Field Instruction pretty much controls who interviews where and whatever. So she hasn't had even as many people to choose from that she would want, or people would change. She's only had interns 2 years, and she had some people change like halfway through and leave and things like that. So another option we thought of was, I don't think she realized the intern programs at Eastern that they have, and she also realizes that there's programs at Washtenaw Community College, and just, you know, the different places she can look now for interns. And so that was just a whole other realm that came out of the presentation part of this.
Another thing that we suggested to her was, you know, to find tutors, mentors, or even some volunteers to come in occasionally from retirement centers where there's, you know, a majority of people that are looking to provide activities for themselves and also to help out other people. She was initially not very receptive to this because her impression, and from what we understood, is she had tried this before, and that the people that she had from retirement centers, they were older, which again, retirement centers, and they weren't very assertive. She didn't think that they could control the type of kids that she has in her program. We, you know, tried to sort of sway her in that, you know, retired people aren't necessarily little old ladies who are pushovers, but they can really be good influences on these children's lives. So hopefully she does that, she'll look into that, but, you know, again, we don't know. Also, we suggested to her that she look to local businesses. Have her interns, you know, look to local businesses and see if maybe they can find some volunteers, some tutor mentors from, you know, professional world. Again, she thought this was a good idea, but also that, you know, if they were going to do it, that they would have come to her, and I just kind of suggested to her that sometimes people just need a, you know, a personal invitation, and so hopefully she'll look at that. Also, another suggestion that we have is my internship right now is at a summer camp, and one of the programs I run is for EI children and EMI children. And so I gave her the phone number, and she's going to call and look about maybe getting scholarships for one or two of her kids so that they have an opportunity and so that their parents, or actually specifically for a child that she has who's in foster care, has an opportunity to try something else.
Could you explain what EI and EMI?
Emotionally impaired and educatively mentally impaired.
Thanks.
Sorry.
But so all of this came out of even just the presentation portion of it. So that was kind of interesting. I don't know. I think in a way we wish we would have utilized Professor Kaufman's schedule of how to have this thing, so I might recommend that to anybody, like in a presentation phase, because you don't know where to go otherwise. You can get a little scattered over the whole process. Is there anything else you guys want to add?
In conclusion, I think we really appreciated working with her. It was kind of a nice mutual relationship where she felt like she gained something by having us working with her, so we didn't feel like we were just bombarding her and just using her and just like sucking everything from her. She felt that it was an even exchange. We were giving and taking, and she was giving and taking. So overall, I think it was a great experience for us in the sense of being able to work one-on-one with the program coordinator and really get a sense of what the program was about and how you can go about just starting and seeing that the basic elements of strategic planning.
Any questions?
I just want to say that it kind of seems like you guys were able to come in and like pinpoint something that needed to happen and kind of help them think like horizontally about it, you know? Like it really kind of like shed some light into like ways that the program can improve and things that needed possibly changing.
Yeah, and something that she said to us last night even is that she was really glad that, you know, even if she knew some of these things that needed to happen, she was glad to see it on paper, because then it's sort of forcing her and pushing her toward getting these things done.
And it kind of sounds to me like, you know, the things that you proposed to her, she was having similar problems, concerns about it. And what that says to me is, you know, maybe the only thing that can really be done at this point is like she needs to really take a look at her internal structure, because no matter what, if she can't retain people, whether they're interns or volunteers or older people, you know, then maybe that's where it needs to begin, no matter how good of recommendations you can make to her.
Yeah.
You know, she still has the problem, unfortunately, and you know, whether that's, you know, developing roles and responsibilities, maybe interns didn't feel like there was enough structure there, but it sounds to me that, you know, until she realizes that she needs to do that and that there's resistance to having somebody help her do that, the program's not going to improve in terms of, you know, the area you were targeting. That's just, you know, I don't know.
I think that's why she loved that project outreach idea even more, though, to know that once they started there, they were pretty much stuck there and being able to drop ad deadline kind of thing, you know? Like, they would have to be there and have to show up, or, you know, they wouldn't get credit, so that there was even some other motivation behind, you know, wanting to help.
Ebony and I actually work for an organization on campus that does, like, tutoring and mentoring.
Can you speak up?
Sorry. Ebony and I work for an organization on campus that does mentoring and tutoring for elementary school kids and high school kids, and I don't know if one of those IP students is a coordinator for the tutors or mentors. Is that their responsibility or not? No. Well, I don't know. We found it to be like that if there was a work study, an intern who was like really responsible in keeping up with the tutors, keeping up with the matches, keeping up with the activities, being there for all the sessions, that really takes a lot of pressure off the staff people, because it's not a hard job, it's not brain surgery, and the hours could be, you know, flexible, and especially for a CO student or a management student, or even an IP student, I mean, it's just supervising college students and managing the relationships and making sure, you know, things just run smoothly. And from working at the neutral zone, they have said that it's really helpful just to even have that one person there when the tutors and mentors are meeting, just so there's just like one person just to concentrate on that.
One
instead of like, yeah, instead of like all the other 50 million things that are happening.
Yeah.
So, and to like keep track of the problems. And it's also been like a good liaison between the kids and the staff, because sometimes the kids and the staff connect on a different level than the mentors and the tutors. So, there's like different information that comes out in those relationships than maybe with the staff. So, I don't know, I think that's just...
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, it's been, I don't know if it's been the same at Pioneer, but I don't know. at the neutral zone, it's just, they've said it's been really helpful, so, and it doesn't take that much time.
Yeah.
One little thing I was going to say is volunteer, retainment, and recruitment. Everybody who works
as a volunteer or work with the volunteers, and you know, but they're really hard work, and sometimes it's tempting to expand and expand and expand, and sometimes it's good just to focus on a solid number of people and nurture the leadership within the volunteers themselves so that they can be peer leaders who can organize themselves or build from there. And also that's a good idea that this people don't like the idea, you know, you go somewhere to help out, but you don't know who you're helping with. So it's a solid matchup system, and also a person responsible for everything that you can go to all the time would be probably helpful. All
right.
Figure five. Yeah, it's working.
It is
working. It is working.
Oh, it's
not breaking. No. Impossible. No. 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 No.
PowerPoint, but they're gonna go with that. They're gonna start with that, you know.
Yeah.
Hope
yeah.
to catch up.
And the actual, we have a document that's the actual timeline and work plan for our strategic plan. It's in my folder right now, so I'm just gonna wait till after the presentation and pass it around so you can look at it over break. But what I'm going to do is introduce, again, what the HOPE program is. The HOPE program is the Health Occupations Partners in Education, and it's a coalition that was started through the Health Professions Partnership Initiative, and that's a collaborative effort that's national. It's an effort of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, and also the American Association of Medical Colleges. So the goal of the entire, I call it HIPPE, because that's the great way to remember it, for HIPPE, is to encourage U.S. medical schools to really start to feed into or to go back to their roots, essentially. Since they're helping professions, it's to get them to go back to the communities, the school systems, and the very families that they aim to serve, and to increase the representation of underrepresented minorities, which in this case are African Americans, Latino or Latina Americans, Native Americans, and Asian Americans in the health profession. So hope comes from that, and that's basically kind of what it is. So I think we talked about that in our previous presentation, but just as kind of like an overview of what our presentation is going to go over as we're trying to get it up on PowerPoint, we're going to talk about the strengths, the weaknesses, and do kind of like a SWOT analysis through answering the questions that Azumi put forth in the outline of the presentation of our action plan, as well as, let me make sure I'm getting everything, some little snippets about the plan itself and how our goal statement as a group matched up with the expected outcomes that we found as a group. So with that, let's see if I covered everything. Yep.
I'm going to talk about why our action plan is needed. We identified three reasons why we definitely need to address this issue. The first is the need to increase underrepresented people of color in the health profession. And currently, approximately only 10% of practicing health professionals are minorities. And that's a low number considering that in the mid-21st century, 50% of the people in the United States would be minorities. So that's a low figure. The second reason is the public-private partnership momentum. Sorry. there's over the last couple of years, there's been a dramatic increase of partnerships between public and private entities. And this is desperately needed in urban areas because they lack the funding and the resources to teach the students science effectively and to prepare them to go on to college and major in health profession. So public-private partnerships are definitely needed. And the last is the changing dynamics of healthcare. And we kind of have a rhetorical question here. It's, are people of color more responsive to professionals who are of similar racial and ethnic backgrounds? And the answer to that is that we don't know because there are not that many of us in there. But I guess people think so because they think that it'll decrease the language barriers. It also decreased the health disparities between the Caucasians and minorities. And there was a survey done, I'm sorry I don't have the exact percentage, but minorities who are in health professional schools, the majority of them would like to go back into low socioeconomic areas to work. So there's definitely a need there. Next, I'm just gonna, I guess, talk about how we assess the coalition. It was just simply we met with the program staff and we reviewed program materials, which consisted of the grant, grants, evaluation, newsletters, activity observations, and one of our members actually works with HOPE, so we have the inside scoop.
All right, so I'm gonna get into who was involved in the planning, kind of like just like coming up with what Ebony was saying. It's a HOPE program staff is Linda Cunningham, which is a program director. Yeah. Joyce Sutton, which is the program coordinator. And it was us all going to the meetings and observing what was going on with the kids, the tutoring sessions, and especially Angie, like she said, that is her placement, as well as the HOPE parents and her parents' representative. Which was partner represented, which they have other partners. They partners like Ministers Alliance of Washtenaw County, very involved, and the NAACP of Willow One, very involved with this program. The U of M is very involved. So they do have a lot of partnership representatives of the university. The one thing that was kind of interesting to me is that St. Joe's is not very involved, but that's something they have to look into in that partnership. Well, what we found in our assessment, our program opportunities is that we have more visibility could strengthen the partner relationship and program attendance. That's the opportunities they can take
as well as graduate assistant staff can provide program staff the support necessary to strengthen the dormant relationship. The dormant relationship that we found is mostly the relationship they have with the parents in the community, because HOPE is mainly a partnership of HOPE and the children in, or the high schoolers in IPSC. And one thing about it is that the kids come to their parents, and we want them to be involved in a sense, because we want them to strengthen whatever they learn at HOPE at home, and they don't know what's happening then. That was one of the things that we feel like that's an opportunity they really need to strengthen, is their involvement in their children's life. But that also will empower them as they go on, and as anything else happens in school, they will know exactly what's happening with their children. They won't be so dormant about it. And in the program threats is there's only 2 more years left in the program grant. This is a 5-year grant, I believe. So with only 2 years left, they have a lot of work they're going to have to do in order to make this more than just a grant-based study, but more of a community-based maybe organization, something that will last beyond than just the grant money. As well as, you know, new federal leadership. That's going to change a lot of people's programs. I mean, who knows how many dollars we'll get from the government now if Bush is the president, or even if Gore is the president. We don't know how many dollars we'll get. So then that changes a lot of people's perspective of how much we can give to the children, how much, you know, they can get from this program. So
I'm
going to
talk about the HOPE program action plan, and basically what Makita was saying, that we're trying to get more parent involvement into the programs, and workshops to facilitate a guide which will assist them in effectively communicating program goals and the promotion of activities that encourage HOPE students and family retention. Some of the expected outcomes are to strengthen the HOPE partnerships, relationships, and continue collaborative efforts with the schools, the teachers, and the parents. Also is to build a better, strong relationship with the Ministers Alliance and the Ypsilanti School District, because it seems like the church is a place where minority involvement is a big part of. And also to develop the facilitator's training guide to increase the effectiveness of volunteer presentations to students. And that part right there to me was important, because some of the U of M students, whether the mentors in the workshops that we're talking about health issues, and this facilitator guide will help them to be aware of certain problems or things that might, some issues or topics that might be uncomfortable with the students, or to discuss with the students and how to go about it. I guess a better way to implement the information without, going into like religious ethics or personal issues that they're trying. Those were the expected grant outcomes. Any questions?
The evaluation. Okay, so what we were looking at in terms of the evaluation was in using the parent involvement plan to really start kind of really to be a framework to evaluating how effective the program is. If we're looking at trying to essentially make the program sustainable, looking at planning beyond, just like Makiba talked about, planning beyond the next 2 years of the program grant, and using that time to really help substantiate the significance of this program in the Ypsilanti School District, because we work with Ypsilanti High and 2 middle schools in Ypsilanti. So you have a great opportunity for that population in grades 6 through 12 to really start to be a core group of really strong health-oriented students to go and matriculate into the health occupation. So the program evaluation as designed right now would be an assessment based on how the kids attend the different components. There's 3 different components and several activities under the 3 components. Looking at the youth attendance overall, their MEEP scores, which is the Michigan Educational Assessment Program. It's the only standardized test that's given to all students in the state of Michigan that measures social studies, math, science, and writing. So using those scores to kind of have a more standardized reliable and valid measure to look at that, as well as their cumulative grade point scores and their marking period scores over the academic year, and then doing a pre-test, post-test, summative question type scale that's like a type of Likert scale to really start to evaluate their overall participation and how they've improved the academic achievement, how they've become more involved in the community, or how they've been, how they've responded to exposure to community involvement, and how they've gotten demonstrated interest in health careers. So we're looking at kind of like the WASIS are now is like a 15-month plan starting in April through next, or June 2002. So that's kind of a description of it, and it would be a non-equivalent comparative program component group design. So that's the way it's established right now. And that's the evaluation part. So that's really pretty much the gist of the presentation. Joe has a question, and we'll go from Morgan.
When did you say the funding ends for this?
Yeah, 2002, 2003.
So that's the reason for the 15 months.
Yeah, so you can use the last 2 years to really substantiate. And by the way, now that we're at the end of the grant, you know, and start looking to those sources so that you're not stuck at the end of the grant like a lot of groups do without next steps. And you don't leave the kids in the lurch either. Mm-hmm. So to have such an effective program, to even go a year, 1 year without the program could destroy all the work that they've done so far. So.
I was just wondering, what do they consider, you said it's like a national thing, so I was wondering what they consider to be health profession. That might sound stupid, but like, do they include like social work?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
they do.
I can go back to it because we have it now. There's all the different, the schools, let me use for example the schools that are, yeah, it's in here, that are involved in this particular program. Because we've got social work, dentistry, engineering, pharmacy, hold on, I'm talking and doing this at the same time.
Pharmacy, public health.
There we go. Okay. And my eyes are dry too. This is crazy. Okay.
Engineering.
So there's,
computer science.
It's all that. And yeah, computer science, because they want to have a broad focus. The Ypsilanti School District, I don't know how this is nationally. I haven't looked at this yet. But Ypsilanti has a 10-point plan that really focuses on improving achievement for all the students in the school district. So Hope is really looking at trying to increase any interest in science and health generally. Those are our program partners in the areas, but they're open to computer science, to other parts of engineering, not just like biomedical engineering or things like that, other things, anything to get the kids, to get the kids and keep the kids interested in health and science, period, with the expectation that this may lead into other things with health occupations.
Just a stupid petty comment or question about the evaluation process and looking at deep scores. Just out of curiosity, you know, I know there's been a lot of talk about how the scores are biased because of how much money a school system has, and then as a result, it also is biased like in more rural areas urban areas or where there's underrepresented groups. So I don't know what school systems are like in Ypsilanti. You know, would that be the case where it could deflect negatively when you present these findings? I don't know. Just
there's NEEP scores for the students from, I'm trying to remember, I think last year, I think from 97 until last year. They are good and very comparative. The point of having the pre-test, post-test kind of survey, kind of balance that out, and looking at their overall grades with the NEEP scores is to balance that very item out, because there's no, for that target population, you know, that particular grade range, there's no real other standardized measure you can use to show how are they really improving and what does that mean. So compared to their grades plus their own interests, it would be a good way to kind of set up kind of like a balanced framework to presenting that very thing, because you're dealing with several of the issues that lead to this whole problem of underrepresentation that aren't very measurable and aren't very well evaluated.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to say, on today, I
have those pre-processed and you can identify materials and programs and set up different things that will help them, I guess, be equivalent with other resource or communities who have more resources and have materials, mm-hmm. that they can pass those MOOP scores.
Last comment. I was wondering why Wayne State University is not there. And I hear my girlfriend is in a medical school there, and she says it's the most diverse medical school in the country.
Oh, is it? Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Say, so
that really does make sense. I think it's because the hippie project starts through actual medical schools, and then they design the program from there.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that I'm sitting here thinking through the grant. I believe that they only designed it for this area,
okay.
just in
that makes sense.
Yeah, and not further than
that.
But hopefully,
in Wayne County.
Hopefully the hippie program will expand because I think it's a pilot project, and they're on the second wave. And I don't know if they're going to expand to a third wave or exactly how far they're going to go. But hopefully, it can get to
mm-hmm.
that point where Wayne State. Oh, that would be excellent to have a program like this in Detroit.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely.
Okay,
we'll see.
All right, thank you.
Can you do something really fast? You were saying this morning that Pfizer is located here in Washtenaw County and is the main backer. It's one of those things where they probably want everything local. So maybe we get a major backer, right, out in Wayne County, the big difference.
Yeah, that's true. And maybe, I don't know how they're doing, expanding their projects out that way or whatever. But that's a good point, too.
Remember the representative was there for the workshop
mm-hmm.
that Saturday from Pfizer, and she actually facilitated one of the workshops.
Okay.
Great.
Well, we're going to take a break, but I was wondering if you can take a class picture while Jenny is here with his extra hand.
I don't take pictures.
Does anybody else take
pictures?
Okay. What's this? I'll just take it out.
Are we taking a picture now before the break?
Is it okay or?
Sure.